Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
I think Masashi Takeda's version of National Scissoring Day is different than the Acclaim's.
I think you are correct. It's funny. I would say you and I are probably the only two people that watched the Glades main event and also watch AEW regularly and had that thought because I was thinking the same thing. Talk about two different wrestling cultures, two different wrestling products. The scissors, a little bit different meaning and usage on that Glades show.
It's been a very unique week or so since we last talked to everybody. Not a ton when it comes to cards and matches. I mean, there have been plenty of shows, and we're going to get into a couple of them here coming up. But it seems to me a lot of the interesting stuff has got nothing to do with being in the ring, at least quite yet. There have been press conferences, there have been shows announced, there have been things set up from New Japan, from other promotions that has really captured my fancy a lot more than anything taking place inside the ring. Although Declaration of Power, as one example, was a fine show.
Yes, I think that's exactly the word to describe it. It's the word that I use on Twitter at Adam of the Band shortly after I watched the show yesterday. It was fine. I guess we'll get into it match by match. I saw some people say that this was somehow a return to form for New Japan Pro Wrestling. That feels, I wouldn't even say a bit strong. That feels really strong. I think the most noteworthy thing, maybe even beyond the show itself, as far as the in-ring, is just the almost shocking lack of interest or discussion online, at least in Western slash English language speaking circles. I mean, I hesitate to ever use the board as an indicator of anything, but just think back to a couple of years ago, even the long threads that there would be for individual major New Japan shows on the board versus now where there's one New Japan thread and there were maybe three people posting in there. Beyond that, I just saw very, very little discussion on Twitter leading up to the show or even during or the day after the show.
You know, it's kind of funny. Some of the discourse that I saw before the show, I don't want to say some, actually, most of it, at some point in the tweet, in the text, in the response, in the somewhere, that person would bring up, usually the most active person talking about it, the fact that they're still ticked off that they can't watch the show's Royal Quest from London from last weekend, and still at some point, even when talking about the Sumo Hall show, bringing up in concert with it that, boy, it would be nice to know when these shows are going up. Why are they not going up? Will they be going up? Those types of questions.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible that as we record this on Tuesday, what is today's date? Is it the 12th or it's the 11th? It's the 11th. It's October 11th. Those shows happen on October 1st and 2nd. There is no sign of Royal Quest Night 1 or 2 on New Japan World. Apparently, some point this week, Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton are going to do English language commentary for them. But they're, you know, it's crazy when you think about the fact that there were several matches on those shows that were preview tags leading into this show, or matches that, like, it just was pretty ridiculous that during the tag title number one contenders match, they had to go spoiler free in the live commentary of Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan versus Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi because they didn't want to give away the result of the FTR Aussie Open tag title match, which had happened more than a week prior.
Yeah, I'm not beating down the door to see any, you know, either one of these shows, but there are a couple of things that, you know, I would like to see Ospreay and Umino just to see how that was. I'd like to see Aussie Open and, you know, FTR actually make a defense of the tag titles. You know, so there is some stuff. Now, the rest of it, you know, not a whole lot is going on there, but like Zack Sabre Jr. and Naito being a great example, you know, it just, I don't know. I don't know what the reasoning was. I can see wanting to save money. I don't know if there was a rights issue thing with fight. I don't know what it is, but it didn't bother me as much as it bothered a lot of people, and it seems to be it bothered a lot of people. At least they wanted some answers as to kind of why. You know, I think people were fine with hearing that it was going to be on delay. I'm sure it annoyed some people that, you know, wanted to see it live and everything. But if you can at least say it's going to be up by X time, well, you know, a little transparency would be good. Or just, you know, again, honestly say this thing's not making it up until November for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that's the whole not being live stream thing. It seems and feels absurd when every tiny indie in the country can live stream on IWTV, you know, or Fight. And New Japan can't find a way to do this. But whatever. OK, it's not going to be live. The idea that, like you said, they haven't given any date for when it's going to go up. And I mean, to be honest, I don't think there's really any excuse for them not having it up. At least, I don't know, mid to late last week, at least getting it up by like Friday or Saturday, heading into the Declaration of Power show on Monday. It's just, I don't know, at a time when they're seemingly hemorrhaging or have hemorrhaged English-speaking fans, people who are in the U.S. or people who are in England and were very excited about this show happening, you would think you'd want to capitalize on all the buzz coming out of the live reports of FTR and Aussie Open, but clearly not a priority. So I guess we move on from there and talk about the actual show, Declaration of Power, which...
Well, Adam, let me just throw one more thing in there, because they could split the difference and actually just do something that they do for Fantasticomania and do for, and just actually have no commentary, just the match, and post that up there. I don't know. I don't know. Although they're far more forward thinking with their television title, apparently.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But no, I agree. Even if just for the sake of, let's say FTR Aussie Open and Naito Ospreay, even just those have, even if it's just a single shot static hard cam, get those individual matches up and then work on the post-production, whatever you're going to do for the rest of the show. There's ways to do it that would have been far more satisfying than what they did. I think any sort of effort would have been more than what was put forth, but we'll leave that there. We do have Declaration of Power, as you mentioned, just a couple days ago, October 10th. The show formerly known as King of Pro Wrestling. I guess now that you have the KOPW title, I guess you either don't want to call the show KOPW, or I guess they could have named the show Who's Your Daddy instead, so we should just be happy it's Declaration of Power.
Oh, God. What I'm hoping for is, after this whole show was over and we saw the trophy get stomped, that maybe we can be done with that trophy. And maybe I'm asking too much. Maybe it's just a little bit of wish casting here by me, but they gave themselves a perfect out to just get rid of it and be done with it and just continue on with Shingo and El Fantasmo as a really awesome mid-card feud that helps both.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I certainly don't think the KOPW title or the stipulations here helped anybody. We'll get to the match later, but I certainly thought the G1 match between the two was better. The show did open on a positive note, though, as Ren Narita made his return to New Japan, coming off of the crazy match that he had with Juice Robinson that aired on Saturday night on New Japan Strong. I know Strong is off a lot of people's radar, and it's even been a little bit off my radar in comparison to how it was a couple months ago, but that match was wild stuff. Ren Narita bloodied, eventually prevailed, a great way for him to end his excursion and come back to Japan. Here he teamed with David Finlay and Robbie Eagles to take on El Desperado, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Doki. Narita wins with the Kaneki suplex hold, really, although this is more, that's the Yuya Uemura move. This is more of the just bridging overhead belly-to-belly suplex. Cool move. I'm a little bit disappointed that after the excursion, he didn't come back with a new finisher. This is what he was using when he was still a young lion in Japan. Thought he looked good here. Would have liked to see him get a little bit more. And also, as I said on Twitter heading into this, I have no idea how a guy like Ren Narita, how and where he fits into the current presentation of New Japan.
Well, you know, I think he fits in as the new King of Strong Style, as the new Son of Strong Style. I really liked it. And for as much as we've, you know, expressed some people's opinions on what they thought about Royal Quest not being up and posted, the timing that they had, and obviously it doesn't take a genius, just takes a little bit of, you know, prior thought going into it, but the way they had that New Japan Strong show and Narita being bloodied, then he comes in and, you know, he makes the triumphant return. He is the Son of Strong Style. It just was not one throwaway match at the Dome. No, it actually, he is the blood of Shibata, and that's what he's going to be. Now, what group he's aligned with, do they decide to align him with a group? You know, from there, I don't know, but him being Black Boots, Black Trunks, that feel, you know, with that legacy and that support behind him and all that hype that's going to go with, you know, the announcers always talking about it, I think that's great. You know, we've had so many characters come through, whether it be the Watos or the Okans or the Evils or the whoever, that I'm actually looking really forward to this. Unfortunately, it is New Japan, and you do have the world of the Bullet Club and this and that, but there's also LIJ, there's also Suzuki-gun, there's also United Empire, where some of that stuff, as long as he's messing with them, you know, I won't be able to complain too much. Now, if his first feud in is with, you know, I don't know, Sho or Yujiro or something like that, then I'm going to be sounding alarm bells, but I'm okay with it for right now. And I thought he looked good coming back. That, the half hatch suplex, with the bridge, I don't know. I think that actually is more impressive than the overhead belly to belly with the bridge. I love that half hatch and doing it with the bridge, because most people that do that suplex, it basically just looks like you're taking somebody over. It doesn't really look like a suplex. You know what I'm saying? Like, he made it look like a really cool dominant move. So I would like him to actually stick with that. I think that would be a great finisher for him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it looks more like a throw than, like you said, most people, it almost just looks like a takeover.
Yeah.
And the idea of sort of having that hook, the half hatch, it's a little bit more believable that a guy can't kick out. I do like the belly-to-belly. I like it as sort of a surprise move, and I wouldn't mind as a flash pin here or there. While it's not a cradle, almost akin to some of the cradle finishers that we see so many people have in Stardom. I agree 100% with what you're saying about Narita. Like, being a breath of fresh air that he is, you know, basically sticking with the Black Boots, Black Trunks, Black Kick Pads, you know, first and last name, Son of Strong Style. I guess I almost just worry if we're at a point in New Japan where a guy like that, like, that's his gimmick, that he's the one guy in the company like that when so much of the company should be that. But I think I'm sort of fighting a losing battle. I think maybe I was just feeling those things even more acutely, having watched the Inoki ceremony and Ten Bell salute before. And obviously, as we talked about on last week's show, you know, and as you detailed in your bio on the Wrestling News, which was included in last week's podcast as well, you know, there's a lot of bad to go along with the good of Inoki and of Strong Style, but like, I wouldn't mind seeing this be a bit more of a regular thing in New Japan than just one guy's character. But he looked good here, and we'll see. He will play a role, maybe a prominent role, coming up just in a couple of days in the NJPW World Television Title Tournament. I don't know. Do you want to, I know that announcement came a little bit later on in the show, but do you want to just get into that now, or do you want to save that for after this, when we actually talk about all the matches that have been announced for the tournament?
You know, I think we may as well save that to after, because so much stuff came out of this show that's got, again, nothing to do with the matches. So we'll just go ahead and shove that over for right now.
Sounds good. Sounds good. So the next thing on this show, Declaration of Power, which we should mention, by the way, 4,000 fans, which is fine, I guess. 4,059. It's not a disaster. It's not great, particularly as things start to open up and in theory people get more comfortable. It was was a number, kind of like the show was mostly a show. We had Zack Sabre Jr. and Tai Chi against Shane Hayes and Bad Dude Tito of TMDK. This was, again, good action, not great, but it's an undercard match, so it's not going to be placed in a spot to be great. What stood out to me here, and we've talked about it on recent podcasts, is just how much more fresh and interesting matches with guys from United Empire or TMDK, you know, these relatively recent new-ish stables in New Japan feel, as compared to what's been the more traditional American-style heel groups of Bullet Club / House of Torture. This was a perfectly fine second match.
No, I agree with you 100%. And that was, you know, that last tour, you know, well, this whole tour, I guess, you know, this one that just passed here that led to this, there wasn't a whole lot on there to really sink your teeth into, but it did give guys a chance to get a lot of reps in, you know, guys like Bad Dude Tito and, you know, being able to team with Haste and actually, you know, get some, again, just everything that they did during that tour. And granted, it was a lot of Jonah and all that stuff to lead up to Jonah in Okada, but It was nice to see different names up there. And I don't know what the future is going to be for TMDK moving forward, because now we have an asterisk that seems to be hung on Jonah because of what Uncle Paul wants to do as head of WWE. But, you know, Haste and Tito, this was a good example, whether it be, you know, again, any combination of, it doesn't really matter. You know, Sabre and Taichi are great, and any combination of new names you can get in there, new faces you get in there, and again, compared to the Chase Owens, compared to the Yujiros, compared to, you know, even the Dokies and people like that. You know, David Finlay in that first match, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know, Robbie Eagles I like a lot, but unfortunately it's a numbers game right now, and they've got things going on with the IWGP title, but hopefully he can latch on to a feud or something to sink his teeth into. You know, with like David Finlay's an example of a guy like a numbers game where, boy, I'd love to see him get a partner or do something to be more in the mix and to freshen things up a little bit with him, because otherwise I don't know what you're going to be doing with him too much.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting with, you know, Finlay's a perfect example. Guys like Shane Hayes, Bad Dude Tito, as we head toward Tag League and Super Junior Tag League happening at the same time, how many of these guys that really don't have a singles direction and also don't necessarily have a really defined tag team direction at this point, where they're going to be placed? You know, you mentioned TMDK. Are we going to see Mikey Nichols come back and team with Shane Haste? Are we going to have Bad Dude Tito and Jonah together in that tournament? I would have thought that would be almost a guarantee, but like you said, who knows now with what's going on with WWE and the amount of people they're trying to get and the interest they have in Jonah. Then on the flip side with Finlay, you know, particularly if Narita is a, you know, if he's with Hontai and he's looking for someone, does he team with Finlay in the tournament? Maybe we see something coming out of Narita and Ishii in the World TV title tournament, which we'll get to later, but maybe something happens with the two of them where there's sort of a respect thing afterwards and Narita teams with Ishii. Who knows? There's a lot of guys without a lot of direction heading towards Wrestle Kingdom, and you figure, particularly with Wrestle Kingdom only being one night, maybe the concurrent tag leagues will help answer some of those questions.
When's Clark Connors coming back? I want to see Connors and Narita team.
Yeah. I want Clark Connors back. I want Alex Coughlin to get that tour of Japan that he was going to have before he got injured and then got announced for and had to say, hey, guys, still injured. Can't be in this tournament. Why did you announce me? But yeah, Clark Connors and Narita as a team would be awesome. I'm still just dying for them to pull the trigger on bringing back Uemura early and having him come back because he's so freaking great. But we'll have to wait for that. We'll see kind of how all that plays into Tag League. Something I'm not looking forward to in Tag League is House of Torture participation. We also had him here in the third match on this show. It was Evil, Yujiro Takahashi, and Sho, the never open weight six-man tag team champions, falling to the natural tag team of Hiroshi Tanahashi, Ryusuke Taguchi, and Hikuleo, as Taguchi pinned Sho after a Hikuleo choke slam it was from Hikuleo.
Well, with Tongaloa out and Tama Tonga losing in his effort, as we'll get to later on, I don't think I spoiled anybody there, against Jay White, you know, or are we going to see Hikuleo and Tama Tonga? Again, Hikuleo could use it. I'm not necessarily keen to see it, but you know what? He could absolutely use as many reps as he can get, and that might be a really good way to do it there. The story of this match, at least at the beginning, was obviously the Bullet Club wanting to pull him back in, the House of Torture wanting to pull him back in, trying to get him over to the dark side. But if you, of course, shot that down immediately, and well, he was there as Hiroshi Tanahashi was Hiroshi Tanahashi for the short periods that we got to see him in this match. And this was a short match anyway, when, what, 7 minutes, whatever it was. And
yeah, then, yeah, 7:14, which is mercifully short for a House of Torture six-man tag. Maybe the most interesting thing to me about this match, watching with the English language commentary, had nothing to do with the in-ring action. It was the heavy hinting at something that I've been kind of hoping for, and I think we mentioned it a few times on the podcast over the last year or so, wanting to see Hiroshi Tanahashi and Fred Rosser as a team. Chris Charlton mentioned several times that that's something that could happen in tag league. So hopefully we see that. It'd be great, and it would be awesome to see Fred Rosser finally get that chance to come over to New Japan proper, teaming with really what would be a perfect partner for him in Hiroshi Tanahashi.
I like Rocky still holding on to the fact that Roppongi 3K was, you know, he brought them to stardom, and damn it, you know, things just went south, but he's going to be talking about that one forever. Remember when I beat Bruno?
The only thing he'll talk about for a longer period of time than that is how much he hates Bushi.
Well, you know, that's a, hey, how can you hate a guy who's got nails? Is, you know, he's got to be using gel for that. You know what I mean? Those things just shine. I'm impressed.
I'm going to say they're Lee press-on nails. I've been watching 80s wrestling for wrestling at random. Sometimes the commercial breaks are left in, and I see commercials for Lee press-on nails.
And Oxy pads. There were a lot of those at the time there. The Oxy pads, the Lee press-on nails, especially for WCW. They were always a sponsor at the end. It would always kind of like, it was very jarring. Like, who the hell's, like, I see Missy Hyatt's on here, but really, Lee press-on nails is a major sponsor? But, hey, you had to get what you can get. And
yes.
We got what we got in that match, and it was what it was there, and we moved on to the special tag match, and I don't know why exactly this was so special, but Jeff Cobb and the Great Okan defeated Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi, and it was a good 10-minute tag team match. This was a good TV tag match you'd see on Raw or something like that. It filled time. There was nothing wrong with it. No complaints whatsoever, but you're not going to miss anything going out of, you're not going to have to miss anything if you don't see it. Same thing goes for the 8-man that's coming up. And Adam, I don't know if you have too many thoughts on Cobb and Okan and Goto and Yoshihashi, or even on the 8-man, but frankly,
well, on the Cobb Okan versus Goto and Yoshihashi, I think your description is pretty apt. It was, you look at everything in this undercard, nothing was put in a position to really blow anyone away. This is a really traditional pro wrestling undercard for this show. Everything up until match six was kept under 10 minutes or right around 10 minutes. I think the tag match was 10:09. Everything else was under 10 minutes. I think just the noteworthy thing is that with Great Okan and Jeff Cobb winning, that puts them in line for the next title shot at FTR, whether that be whether that be coming up in November in Osaka, which that has not been announced yet, to the best of my knowledge. Maybe that's going to be one of the big matches for the 28th in New York City. I could see that being very likely. That sort of sets that up. And then the next match, LIJ versus United Empire match, only went 8:07, good action. Not much really there, though. The big story, though, is that Teton, that's right, Teton from CMLL, is the new member of Los Ingobernables de Japón, LIJ. It's been a long time since we've had a new LIJ member. There's been a lot of speculation who that could be. I think a lot of people thought, well, maybe the end of this whatever character arc that's been going on forever with Yo post-breakup with Sho. People thought that could eventually lead Yo to joining LIJ. But no, it's Teton here. Definitely kind of out of left field, but I'm excited. Teton's looked great every time he's been in New Japan, and I would assume this means he's going to be there regularly for a while now.
Yeah, this maybe it was supposed to be Andrade. Maybe they had plans for Andrade. You know, who knows, you know, and obviously with the whole deal with AEW and AAA, that's the one forgotten part of Andrade and Sammy Guevara going at each other a couple weeks ago now is the fact that, you know, for a lot of people, the most notable part of that conversation was the fact that he was bearing AAA, almost went to Noah because he was upset that he couldn't go to New Japan. So, you know, again, that's we'll have to see what unfolds out of that more, if anything does. But Titan, I love. I really like him a lot. I always liked him as the middleweight champion for, you know, several years now. You know, there was so much attention put on Kami Itachi, Hiromu Takahashi, and so many others, the Dragon Rojos, the Dragon Lees, and this person and that person, that, you know, Titan was right there the whole time. And I was always a fan of his. He dropped, obviously, the middleweight title. I don't know how long he's going to be there. I don't know if he's, you know, out of CML, quote unquote, for a while now, if this is going to be a long-term thing or exactly what it is, but I liked it. You know, unfortunately, in execution, thank God for things being able to be edited, because if you see a package on this, it would come across fantastic. It was dragged out, unfortunately.
Yes. Just,
the whole thing went way, way too long, but I'm giving it some grace. And again, like you mentioned, this is the first time we've had any addition to LIJ in a long time. And not only that, it's the first, technically, it's the first luchador that's joined the group. Now, forget about the fact that it was a bunch of luchadors who started the damn thing in Mexico in the first place. Just go ahead.
Well, didn't we also have Terrible as a satellite member that was on at least one New Japan tour, sort of as a member of LIJ, I guess not officially.
That's right. I forgot about that. So, yeah, I guess technically there's that too. And look, it's just a line, you know, pretty much for the most part. So Titan's in, and that's good too, because again, are we going to see, is it Titan and Bushi? Is it, you know, exactly what are the, you know, he obviously is going to be playing a part in the tag team tournament. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be Titan and Bushi, and that, you know, that sort of frees Hiromu up to do what I guess we'll be talking about coming up after the next match. Just to sort of elaborate on what you said about how this whole post-match thing went very long, Titan interferes. LIJ acts as though they don't really know who this is or why this guy is interfering. You know, he's got a different mask on over the Titan mask, so you can't tell for sure who it is. He, you know, this goes on for a long time. He's lingering outside while we see Naito and Ospreay nose to nose after the match. He gets up on the apron on one side. He goes to the other side. He stands dramatically facing the hard cam, finally takes the mask off. It's Titan. The LIJ members in the ring don't know what to make of this. The story here is clearly that it's not like Titan was, that LIJ brought him here. He showed up and is trying to kind of shoehorn his way into the group, but they take a vote with the fist bumps, if you will, and all decide to have Titan join. So Titan is a member of LIJ, and he is on the shows, at least for this this brief upcoming tour leading into the November 5th show in Osaka. So like you said, we'll see how long-term of a thing this is for Titan, but I mean, I'm never going to complain about having a guy of that ability wrestling more regularly and being in the mix and bringing some much, much, much needed freshness to the New Japan roster.
What if we find out that Shingo's pissed?
That Shingo doesn't want him in?
He never wanted him in the whole time. He's
Well, if we find that out, that then means we get Shingo versus Titan matches, which I am 100% here for.
Yes, you know what? Yeah, I won't complain about that at all either. So there was, you know, and again, that match, Will Ospreay is really good. God, is he really, really good. And he and Naito, I don't want to say it's flying under the radar, but right now New Japan's not hot, and I know there's probably a lot of people who say, well, look, I've seen Naito and Ospreay before if you're not a big New Japan diehard, but I've loved their interaction.
Only once, though. Only once. Yeah. In the G1, that was their first singles match. So it's just like the rarest of the rare, a relatively fresh big-time singles match in New Japan.
And they're not doing anything, you know, too obnoxious to bring it up. Now, granted, we haven't heard too many Ospreay interviews. I guess we could have heard them, but, you know, we haven't gotten Royal Quest. But anyway, but, you know, they've just been, as far as just him sticking the belt in Naito's face and Naito turning his back on it or then throwing it out of the ring and Ospreay, I've loved every interaction they've had going back and forth with each other and just kind of just being dicks to each other. And it's been kind of understated and it's not getting a whole lot of play because, again, they're not very hot right now and they got other things towards the top of the card. But I've been loving this.
Yeah, I'm that's probably what I'm most excited about in terms of anything that's been announced so far for upcoming New Japan shows, including what we know as of yet for the Wrestle Kingdom card. The other interesting thing, I guess, about that match and that feud, I really thought the English language commentary did a great job of equating Naito challenging for the U.S. title to when he would be always seemingly wrestling for or holding the Intercontinental Championship, and the fact that he didn't want that belt at all. He just wanted what it brought, which was him one step closer to the IWGP title. And, you know, the story is basically the same thing here, that Naito doesn't care at all about the U.S. title, but this gets him closer in theory to the IWGP World Heavyweight title and or being in a main event spot at Wrestle Kingdom.
I love that. There's got to be somebody like that in every organization. Yes. You know, everybody should want those belts. They should mean something. There should be value there. But there should also be a guy, just like in life, that doesn't care about any of that other stuff. He just wants the one top prize. That's it and that's all. Will he ever get that prize at the Dome for as many fans that want him to? I don't know. But it's certainly not going to be this year. That is for sure.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get to it. We have the main event for the Tokyo Dome already determined. But before we get there, we have a match that was not planned up until a couple days before when it came out that Kushida was not yet recovered from his illness. I guess the result of this match is somewhat surprising to me. It says some things going forward about, I guess, what Kushida's standing is. And also, you know, it sets up a four-way. It's Master Wato in a relatively surprising upset, defeating Taiji Ishimori in a pretty good match. You know, Wato, he's still Wato. Yes, the awesome throw avalanche German is a great addition to his arsenal. This sort of reverse recitamente, which he used to get the win, very cool move. But all the flaws are still there. Just his in-ring instincts are nowhere near at the level of the other guys, you know, top guys in the division. He's junior heavyweight Yoshihashi. We've said it before. Maybe a decade from now, we'll have it totally figured out, but he kind of is what he is at this point. But he wins this match. We then have Hiromu run out. We then have El Desperado run out. And the end result of that is that the four-way IWGP junior heavyweight title match coming up at Wrestle Kingdom is already made some 3 months in advance. It will be Taiji Ishimori defending against Master Wato, Hiromu Takahashi, and El Desperado in a four-way match, which, whatever, your mileage may vary on whether you're excited about that or not. But what it tells me is that, like, they don't expect Kushida to be back and ready anytime super soon, because it sure as hell seemed like the plan was Kushida defeating Ishimori and then go on to challenge him in some way, shape, or form at Wrestle Kingdom. Maybe the original plan being a four-way with Kushida in the spot that Wato's in that four-way, but that's completely out the window now. And really, I don't see much of a path, if any, to Kushida being on that card outside of a Rambo pre-show.
Is Muda going to be there? I don't know. It really surprised me, because it didn't surprise me when Wado went in there. It's like, okay, you know what? I bet you he's going to get the win, and I bet you he's going to get a title shot, and that's going to fill up some time here in the next 2 months before we get to January, and we can bide some time for Kushida to be back. And then it was like, well, okay, afterwards, you know, immediately Watto, you know, they and the announcing was great. You know, they continued to play into the story, you know, bringing up all of Watto, you know, being that, you know, that 500 kind of player, you know. In fact, they brought up his record, you know, it's not a bad record, but, you know, it's not very good here either. It's a losing record. And, you know, is he the kind of guy that just, he's not going to be your everyday player, but he, you can probably pull him off the bench and he does okay. Charlton echoed something that I think is great in believing that, you know, Master Watto team with Taguchi, he was really good. He stood out in that. Maybe he's a tag team wrestler. Maybe that's bad for him, but, you know, maybe that's what he is. I thought all of that stuff, including Rocky bringing up his in-ring instincts, all that sort of stuff, I thought it was great. And I was really surprised when Hiromu and Desperado came out. It's like, okay, we're going to get a four-way. But again, okay, this is going to be what tides us over till we get Kushida and whoever it's going to be. And now we're not getting Kushida at all. And that is a little bit, it's kind of scary. I don't want to say scary, but like hand, foot, and mouth disease when it comes to kids and stuff like that, it goes away, you know, after a little bit. Like he's been seemingly consistently ill now for a little bit here. And we still got a long way to go. So I don't know what the plan's going to be for Kushida. I hopefully he's got a spot. But hopefully he's okay and he's actually recovering. And this is just an idea change and it's got nothing to do with his health. And it's just got more to do with, well, we've decided to change some plans because of his past health issues. I hope this is not a continuing thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's a really good way to put it. Who knows? I mean, I guess maybe his path to the Tokyo Dome is, if this is a shift in plans, which it sure as hell seems like it is. If he is able to be back in time for Super Junior Tag League, maybe he gets a tag partner, and whoever that partner is, they win Super Junior Tag League and challenge TJP and Francesco Akira for the junior tag titles. Otherwise, like I said, I think it's Rambo or bust for Kushida at this point. That then brings us to King of Pro Wrestling 2022. Who's your daddy match? A match that, sure, absolutely really fits the bill of being on a show honoring Antonio Inoki. What a sight that is, just a few hours after the Inoki ceremony. 16 minutes and 1 second. Shingo Takagi wins in really abrupt fashion, actually. The finish with the sort of the ground Cobra Twist, Octopus Hold, Majigatame, which I guess you could say is an allusion to Antonio Inoki's Octopus Hold. So strange that it would be in this match here, but kind of an abrupt finish for a match that I thought was very good, but to me it didn't touch the level of their previous encounter, and it was also just hard for me to care about it when the stipulation is, who is your daddy? They have the whole deal where Shingo wins, Phantasmo begrudgingly goes along with it and says it, punches him in the balls afterwards. And the announcers are doing this forced laughter like it's the funniest thing they've ever heard. I don't know that I've ever seen something more modern WWE-like in New Japan Pro Wrestling than the post-match of this. It just did not work for me at all.
No, because you left out the part about the pacifier. It wasn't just him calling him daddy over and over. It was, now you're going to stick the pacifier in your mouth. And yeah, it's just a reminder that they didn't need any of this bullshit for Shingo and Phantasmo, because they're great on their own. And I hope they continue to be. And afterwards, after he punched him in the balls and left him laying, he LP jumped on the trophy and smashed it. And I just wish it would go away. You know, Shingo is above this, and nobody's above having some fun and doing some comedy in pro wrestling. But for Christ's sakes, like, it was a Yano thing. Once it got away from Yano as part of his gimmick, I mean, this is like Andy Kaufman wanting to be the intergender wrestling champion in the 80s. Like, that's Yano's trophy. Let him do any wacky match he wants with anybody he wants. Who cares? But, like, you know, and even then, that got to the point of the dog cage and this. It got to be too much. And then to bring in Shingo and LP with this when they don't need it, I hope he stomped it. I hope they're done with it. I know you don't think they are. They probably aren't. But, boy, this was just a great example of, I can have these two guys wrestle just because they want it. Like, LP wants to get better. He's a heavyweight, wants to move up the ranks. He's facing a former IWGP champion. He wants to stay relevant. He wants to be in the mix. Like, that would have been fine. Like, that. That's what I would have taken. That's what I would have took for this. So, you know, again,
well, you could have still had. I mean, you can have LP being obnoxious, being a troll, being a brat, all those sorts of things without having to have the "Who's Your Daddy" and the pacifier and the diaper a few weeks ago. Yeah. Like, you know, much like the House of Torture stuff. Like, I don't know who this is for. I don't know what it adds. I don't know what it accomplishes. I wish and hope desperately that you are correct, that this will be the end of KOPW. I do not think it will. I do hope that it does somehow, if it's going to be around, somehow find its way back to Yano, because if it is going to be the comedy stuff, it does not do a guy like Shingo Takagi any favors. The creative cumulative count rules that they had for the matches of Shingo and Taichi, that was wacky, but it was at least in-ring action just with different rules. If you want to do that, that's fine. But if we're going to this level of stuff, I don't really necessarily at all need to see a guy like Shingo Takagi involved. I'd much rather see him in there with the likes of Kazuchika Okada and Jonah up in that mix. That was the semi-main event. We talked about on the shows, because we did several last week, we talked about how really the result of this match was not in doubt. And I was a little, I won't say down on it, but I just wasn't all that excited about it because it seemed so obvious what the result was going to be. But man, when this got going, this was really, really good. The closest thing to great on this show, I think, by a pretty considerable margin, particularly the several hat tips to Inoki Vader, including that German by Jonah on Okada, which it looked exactly like the Vader German to Inoki that we saw in the video package before. They just have fantastic chemistry together. He's a great opponent for Okada. And I desperately hope against hope that Jonah will not be the next guy following in the footsteps of Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows showing up on Raw.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to what you've already said, because this is the one you need to go out of your way to watch even more than Jay White and Tama Tonga. I mean, Jonah was fantastic, and that's what you come away with at the end with the handshake that they have. They're 1-1 now against each other. Okada gets back the G1 win. They go with callbacks through the 50 years of All Japan into tributes to Inoki. It was a perfect little 20-minute match, and I won't even say little. It was a perfect 20-minute match, and I thought they kicked a lot of ass. Like you mentioned, they seemed to be made for each other. They brought up the drama, you know, and obviously, of course, was Tama Tonga and Jonah, were they looking like they were going to win their matches? Of course not. But they did, you know, a good job building into some drama into the commentary. Hey, what if one of them wins? What if both of them wins? What then happens? So I thought they did a really good job with that. And I hope Jonah doesn't go away, because I don't know, as Bronson Reed, I mean, Triple H really cared about that guy a lot, put a lot into his entrance, treated him like a boss when he was down in NXT, got moved up to the main roster, didn't get a shot under his father. So maybe that is a good idea for him, because he is going to have a backer in Triple H. But even then, I just think of him in that world because of his size, because of his height, and because of what he's already shown, that much like a Jay White, you could probably be a star somewhere else. In fact, I bet you absolutely could be. But you're still going to be, I think, better off as far as me as a fan. I think he's much better off in New Japan.
Oh, 100%. I could not agree more. He's Vader. He's Bam Bam Bigelow. He's Giant Bernard. Whatever you want to say, he's that guy in New Japan right now. And the dynamic between them is great. Like, when I think of big monsters against top baby faces in my era of watching wrestling, the last 35 plus years, I always judge things by, like, how close did this feel to me How close did this get, I should say, to feeling like Vader versus Sting? And there were moments where it definitely did. To me, this had Vader Sting vibes. This had Umaga John Cena vibes, which are both very, very high compliments. In a world where Triple H isn't running WWE and there's not a threat of him going back, to me, the play would be, you know, Okada obviously is winning the IWGP title at Wrestle Kingdom. We'll get to that in a few minutes. I just don't see any other scenario than that. I would have Jonah run through the New Japan Cup next year like a hot knife through butter and have the rubber match between the two of them for the IWGP world title next. I guess it would be April.
That would be awesome. That would be an awesome way to do things. And hopefully he's there in April and not in Los Angeles or where WrestleMania is at this year. But, and again, look, this is still just speculation right now. We don't know, but you know, I think there were a lot of us that turned our nose up at the thoughts of Carl Anderson and Gallows going back, and they did. So, you know, we know the WWE, because of what's happened with AEW, we know they've reached out to people. They apparently reached out to Gallows and Anderson when they were under contract, and that doesn't seem to be an issue because what's Impact going to do? But, you know, did they reach out to Jonah? And if that's the case, who else could they have possibly reached out to that may be looking like regulars for New Japan? So we'll have to see what happens. Well, and not, yeah, that, by the way, doesn't that, that's not counting FTR if they were part of that mix.
Possibly, yeah, no, maybe. For sure. That's a separate thing. When you look at on the AEW side, you know, apparently whether it be an Aleister Black, Malakai Black, I guess they would want him to be Aleister Black. You know, as one example, Buddy Murphy. So, yeah, we'll see how that all plays out. What all of this led to, though, was the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Jay White, Tama Tonga, Jay White wins just over 31 minutes with the Blade Runner. I mean, to me, this match was kind of what I expected going in. It was good. It wasn't great. Tama Tonga has done a good job as a babyface. I actually think he's, as a singles wrestler, far better as a babyface than as a heel. When you think about his G1 run a couple years ago as a heel versus a couple months ago as a babyface, the match was, again, I feel like we're saying this a lot about this show outside of the semi-main. The match was fine. The finishing stretch, particularly the finish, was great with Tama Tonga going for the second rope version of the gun stun and Jay White catching him and immediately hitting him with the Blade Runner. But there was zero point in this match. There was no point in this match where I believe that Tama Tonga was going to win. The Jonah Okada match going in, I didn't think Jonah was going to win. Throughout it, you don't think Jonah's going to win, but there are a few points where it's like, oh man, goddamn, he's just so great. And this is such a cool spot. Maybe it'll happen. Nothing like that here with Tama Tonga. The other thing I have to say about this, Mike, is that there was no reason at all for this match to go 31 minutes and 7 seconds other than New Japan feeling like our main events have to go 31 minutes and 7 seconds.
You know those things I say about Kento Miyahara sometimes in the past about some of those matches, did they have to go that long? Well, here's a good example of it with Jay White. And I can see somebody saying, you know what, it did have to go that long because when's Tama Tonga going to have another shot at this and you're tying some stuff up? And I, okay, you know, I get that. And the fact that it's Jay White on the other side of that thing, and because the closing sequence was so strong, I'm not going to complain about it. But as you mentioned, it was a half hour with, unfortunately, no shot at all. Because at least with Jonah, like you mentioned, they would be 1-1. They're still before the dome. If you didn't want to do a three-way or whatever they were talking about, you could always have them face off against each other in the penultimate match before, you know, whoever it is gets to Jay White. But with White and Tonga, you knew there was no shot because what are they going to do? Have Tonga win the belt and then White wins it back? It just, none of it makes sense. It just, none of it made sense. So I thought Tama Tonga was great. I echo your sentiments as far as him being a singles and a baby face. But now that this has happened, I don't know exactly how they're going to shuffle some things here, you know, in the future, but I think Tama Tonga could use another partner to be in the mix. And I'd like to see him go back to that with Jay White. We know what his future is. It's Okada. And there's nobody better at being Jay White than Jay White. He is a great professional wrestler. And again, he is tailor-made for New Japan, much like I talked about with Jonah, you know, even more with Jay White because of what he's able to get away with talking to the crowd and just because of how they respond to him. He's perfect to me for there. As far as being an antagonist, as far as being that cocky American heel, he's doing a great job with it.
Oh, he is for sure. And no knock really on his performance or even Tama Tonga's. I guess just my issue is like the match, the result, what it's leading to at Wrestle Kingdom. If there's only one word I could use to describe it, it would just be perfunctory. Like it just... Everything just feels like it's just happening. There's no excitement behind it because it's all so easy to call. And we've talked about before that like predictable wrestling isn't necessarily bad wrestling, but when it's so predictable and the things that are being done have been done time and time and time and time and time again in the same promotion by the same booker with the same wrestlers, it just, you care about it less each time. Like you knew going into this that because it's how all of Jay White's big matches in Japan at least go, that nothing was going to happen until we had the Gato interference. That happened. Jay White wins. He's wrestling Okada. And like in theory, I know, like I want to be more excited about that match than I am because Okada might be the best wrestler in the world. Jay White, one of the best and most effective wrestlers in the world. They're going to wrestle on the biggest stage in all of Japan, Wrestle Kingdom. But I feel like it goes back to what we've talked about before. I feel like I'm just seeing a story being told for the second time in largely the same way with the same guys in the same venue with the same stakes at hand. And it's really, really hard to get excited about that.
No, that's fair. And when you do stuff like that up top, because sometimes you have to go back. Look, we're going back to, you know, Lashley and Brock or this person and then Roman Reigns and everybody. You're going to go back to the same matches. But then what do you have on the undercard that makes things more palatable for everybody? What do you got for us to look forward to under there? And what is there? You know, we got Ren Narita back. Okay. You know, but what about, you know, again, the tag team scene? What about the junior scene? You know, we've got the four, but it's like there is a lot of talent there and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of potential there that to me, again, isn't being cultivated properly. And I think if it was done better, you know, the flashiest thing on this undercard would have been more than Shingo and El Phantasmo in a Who's Your Daddy match. You know what I mean? So, yeah. You know, the fact that you're going to White and Okada, of course it's the right thing to do. It's going to be great. How they tell the story in there, obviously, is going to what makes it different and sets it apart from the other matches that we've seen and the other great main events and the other matches between the two of them. But also now, what else you got on that show that's going to, you know, strike our fancy? And and just having outsiders come in does not, you know, heal that. It is
it's a bandage.
Yeah, it's exactly. Just it's a sleight of hand, and we'll see. Again, we'll see. Some of the stuff coming out of this show, because there's a lot when it comes to we've got a new potential wrestler coming in with Oleg Bolton, and we've got the TV title, we got this and that, even that stuff. Like, this idea of the TV title, I mean, come on, man. Like, why is this? Because you just felt you wanted to see if you could screw with Tony Khan and see if he'd put another one of your belts on his TV because he loves belts so much? Like, the fact that this, we have a world TV title, and how it was described as, well, it's going to be more for the younger folks. It's going to be more for the higher speed. And then we see in the tournament Toru Yano, and it's just, I don't know. It's a superfluous belt already to me, and there's part of the concept I like, and I would like more if there weren't a whole bunch of other belts there that just are dying right now, like the junior tag titles, or like, again, you go ahead and pick them.
Yeah, it's, I think the thing that I, the biggest issue I have, I guess there's a few. First, it's just like, it's such an obvious part or an obvious thing from the playbook of a booker who's running out of or has run out of ideas. Let's create another belt. You know, and that's like, that's cool in the sense, okay, it's something different we haven't seen in New Japan before. But the booking around it is going to be so similar, I'm sure, to everything we see. And so it's still going to feel the same, much like bringing in new wrestlers, as you mentioned. But the tournament was described as a couple of things. Like you said, it was sort of equated to the high-speed title in Stardom. 15-minute time limits, high pace, younger wrestlers. The lineup for the tournament doesn't necessarily hold up to that. The other thing that I just found really odd was they talked about how this is a belt that's going to be in a lot of ways for the smaller towns, for shows and cities and towns and villages that don't normally get big matches or title matches. And then where are the first two nights of the tournament happening? Cork and Hall. Where is the semifinals of the tournament happening? Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium. Where is the final of the tournament happening? Wrestle Kingdom 17 in Tokyo Dome. So it's just kind of this weird thing where you would think maybe you'd have those matches. You do Korakuen, but maybe you have the other matches on smaller shows. Maybe as a bit of a hook for the return of New Year Dash, you have the tournament finals, one of the featured matches on New Year Dash instead of Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Kingdom. It just feels kind of all over the place, which is a lot of what New Japan feels like right now, a combination of just sticking with what works booking-wise or what they think works, and then also just throwing random ideas up against the wall. I'm not complaining necessarily about some of the matches, but to me, if this was being positioned as like a return of the U30 title with 15-minute time limits under a different name, I think I'd be a little bit more excited about it than it's, you know, Hiroki Goto versus Kenta, Hanare against Evil, stuff like that. It just doesn't make me feel a whole lot.
The never open weight title is in flux because obviously Carl Anderson's supposed to be going back to defend that title against who is it? It's
against Hikuleo on November 5th, in addition to the semifinals of the World TV title tournament, Ospreay versus Naito for the U.S. heavyweight title, and Wato, Ishimori, Hiromu, and El Desperado in a tag team match, partners yet to be determined.
I mean, this is why, like, get rid of the king of the KOPW trophy.
Yes.
You have the strong title and the strong tag titles that you just got off the ground, and I get that that's not in New Japan's realm that we're talking about now. That doesn't really exist. But the thing is, when it comes to the Tokyo Dome, that actually should exist. So those two titles should actually be built towards, no matter where they're defended around the world, no matter where that stream is played on NGPW World, but those things should be building up to the dome. And when that happens, it takes time away from other people. And that's fine, but like that should be important. Same thing with the IWGP Junior Tag Titles. If you want to have it in a four-way at the dome like they usually do every year, great. But that should actually mean something, except for the people listening to this show. How many people know that it's Akira and TJP? They probably don't. You know, they probably have forgotten about that fact because it's not driven home enough. So, you know, I see that sort of thing. We have the IWGP Stardom title, and obviously that's kind of, we don't know exactly how much time it's going to spend in Japan as opposed to, you know, being over in New Japan Strong or whatever. So I know it's not the end of the world to bring in a title, but like this is it's a catch-all title where it's going to be, no matter where it shows, it'll be free and stream somewhere. You know, it's kind of like the Mid-Atlantic title because we want it to go to the regional towns. But as Adam just mentioned, you know, the whole thing's being run in Charlotte and Greensboro. It's for the younger people, but it's not necessarily for the younger people. It's just, My thing is, looking at the lineup, this is probably a way to give the belt to Ren Narita and get him jump-started with something, and I think that would be a really smart thing to do, considering everybody that's involved in it and considering what's been said about it. Like, he would be the person that would make the most sense to have that title. You want him to go to all the small towns, right? Why? Because you want all the people to know that guy is, like, that's our guy. And then as he continues to build himself up, you know, to me, at least booking-wise, if it's not Narita, I don't know who it is. But frankly, nobody needs a TV title. To me, and I thought, too, I thought this was like the All Japan Gaora thing where it's like,
yeah.
I thought TV Asahi was like, and I would get it because if this gets you more money or better TV or whatever, like I would understand it. But the fact that it's just basically a, hey, New Japan World, you don't want to pay the 999 yen? Well, guess what? We're going to give you a free match that'll show on this, on YouTube, on here, on there. And it's like, I don't know. I'm not sold.
It's the Impact Digital Media title, I guess, is what this is. There's not really, as much as they tried to define there being a reason for the title, when you look at the tournament, there isn't really a great reason. I guess the most obvious play, even though I'm not dying to see this final, the most obvious play would be Ren Narita defeating and vanquishing Evil in the final as the ultimate, you know, crappy American style, as you would call it. And I would agree at this point, versus Strong Style, Son of Strong Style final. I agree. There really is nobody else in this tournament that would be helped at all by winning this belt. The tournament starts in just a couple of days as we record this. Corkin Hall, David Finlay, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Alex Zane and Zack Sabre Jr. Following night, Hanare versus Evil, Yoshihashi versus Jeff Cobb. Then we have on the 16th, Nagaoka, Hirooki Goto versus Kenta, Sonata versus Taichi, and the first round of the tournament wraps up on the 26th, Yano versus the Great Okan. Ren Narita versus Tomohiro Ishii, which should be without a doubt the standout match of the tournament. We have second round matches taking place on the 27th and 30th. And then, as we said, the semifinals taking place at Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium on the 5th of November. And then 2 months from then, we're waiting 2 months after that to crown the champion. The champion will be crowned at Wrestle Kingdom.
Apparently, we'll be in reruns until they do that.
Well, that's actually a funny point, because it's like we have the tag league and the junior tag league coming up. But essentially, once we get through November 5th, outside of that, like, there's really not a whole lot happening as far as setting up matches. You would have to think on the 5th. Whoever wins Anderson and Hikuleo, which has to be Hikuleo at this point, you'd think Hikuleo's next challenger for the Never Open Weight title will be established. And then you would have to figure that whoever wins Osprey Naito, their next challenger is going to present themselves and head into you know, what we'll see for Wrestle Kingdom. Because after that, really, we're going to be knee-deep in tag tournaments.
God, you know who I hope Hikuleo's next challenger is? Will Osprey. And I hope they can go ahead and just seal that belt and get rid of it, too. I know there are people that probably love, there are, they love the Never title. They love the Intercontinental title. Again, this is superfluous belts to me. I would love to see them get rid of that one, too. I would love to see them change the name of the United States title. They won't, because of obviously what they think their plans are for the United States and all that stuff. So I get it. But like, I would just love to see the U.S. title go back to the Intercontinental title and see the rest of these belts just go to the side, because, you know, kind of, it's just, the more I think about it too, how ridiculous it is, where on New Japan, well, like Fred Rosser, like, put up his title matches. Has everybody seen all of Fred Rosser's title matches? I bet you they haven't. You know, how much penetration does New Japan World have in Japan? So how much are they actually watching Strong? We know a little bit because, you know, Filthy was over a little bit. But, you like, you know, I don't know. I just, to me, there's no path there for Fred Rosser. I'm sure he's going to be at the Dome in some form. But, like, again, this, we're starting to set the thing up, and it's like there's going to be so many people that with only one night and the chances of old guys coming back and foreigners coming in. It's interesting to see because it's a numbers game that unfortunately I think they might be some people are going to be squeezed out on.
Yeah, yeah, and it's of New Japan's own doing. So many of these titles right now feel like answers to questions that no one's asking. The Never Open Weight title, I wouldn't say I love it. I loved it, past tense, when it was something that actually felt like it had its own sort of unspoken division when it was basically the BMF title of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and it was mid-card badass dudes just beating the hell out of each other in 12 to 15 minute matches. That has a reason, but it's been several years since it's had that or really any identity. And so sealing it at this point, if they're not going to bring it back, I mean, I would make the argument, you know, you talked about the TV title and it being the title for Ren Narita. Why are we even doing this tournament? Why isn't Ren Narita just winning the Never Open Weight title and making it the Never Open Weight title again?
That would be good. Why is it the never title? I mean, this goes back to, what was it, Masato Tanaka, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. I mean, like, you're having an IWGP women's title that you are completely reliant on Stardom to do, so it might as well just be Stardom's IWGP title, but, like, you know, never is yours. Never is gone. Never should have been. It should just be, at this point, the IWGP six-man tag team titles. And when it comes to the never title, again, I just seal the damn thing and be done with it.
Yeah, I'd rather have, I agree in the sense, I'd rather have one or even two undercard titles that are clearly defined, like whatever it is, if it's the never open weight title, if it's the US title, if it's the Intercontinental title, like that secondary title that actually has a meaning, like the US heavyweight title back in the day in the NWA, or the WWF Intercontinental title, let's say in the late 80s, early 90s, or the Intercontinental title in New Japan 5-6 years ago, 100% for that. And if you want to have something, whatever you call it, if you want to have something like what the supposed stated goal of the TV title is, which is shorter time limits, sort of being set aside for the younger wrestlers, I have no problem with that. But these really no reason to exist, undefined divisions for these belts that really don't give them any weight or meaning, I'm with you. Let's put him in the vault with the U30 title and the old white belt IC championship and move along. But yeah, that's, unless you have any other thoughts, that's kind of as much as I got in New Japan right now.
No, that was pretty much it. You know, as everybody knows probably by now too, Yuji Nagata introduced Oleg Bolton, from Kazakhstan, the amateur wrestler that I guess he was fifth at the Worlds or something like that, whatever it was.
Pretty high class, world class, I just say legit amateur wrestler. I rely on people like you more than me, but everyone I see who seems to be in the know says, like, this guy is no joke, and you never know how that's going to translate to wrestling, particularly this era of New Japan, but the athletic pedigree is certainly there from all reports.
Yeah, and with obviously all of this stuff with Inoki happening here recently, you know, you got those feels to go back to when he got all those Russian wrestlers what were the...
Zangiev
and
Shimakov is a couple of examples.
So, yeah, so it's like that. I kind of got that same feeling, but obviously with all the stuff going on with Inoki right now, that's what probably gave me those feels about him coming in, but... If he's
well,
a
he's
monster.
Also he's 29 years old. I just want to throw that in as well, because there, you know, the translated post show comments from Yuji Nagata, he kind of nominated Bolton for this, kind of didn't, but he at least brought up the idea of Bolton at 29 with the high level amateur wrestling background that he has, maybe being a guy who could at least somewhat skirt or sidestep the traditional young lion path. So I think that's something to look for as well. We've wondered if or when they're ever going to put someone, you know, on the accelerated, just totally different trajectory that, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura had, which we went into in detail last week. It seems like Bolton might be, you know, at least he might have the best chance for that since, let's say, Kitamura flamed out. It seemed like before that he may have had that opportunity.
Yeah, that's exactly who I was thinking was Kitamura, if it wasn't for the head injury, because he was in his 30s or something, wasn't he? I mean, he was up there and obviously had a little bit of a different look. And it was one of those smart things where it's like, who's going to buy this anyway with him going through the Young Lions thing? And he had enough training and all that stuff. It was the right thing to do. And I think if that's what they're going to do here with Bolton, if they can get him to just passable, I think that's probably the smart idea too. I think that's actually a really good idea.
Well, just looking at the guy and knowing his background, like, does anyone really want to see that guy, you know, losing in 4 minutes at Tomoaki Homa?
No.
Or Togi Makabe, or
do you
know,
want to
getting
see him go
pinned for 2 or 3 years?
10-minute draw
with Young Lions, you're like, well, they don't lose anything. They gain something in terms of sympathy, and they come out the other end bigger stars than if they had just been put into the main roster. But Bolton, I think he might be the rare guy that it really could be detrimental to have that guy with that background and that look and that legitimacy, you know, just going through the normal 2-3 years Young Lions motions.
As if the thought of 10-minute draws with Oiwa and Fujita and Nakashima, just it doesn't make any sense.
So.
No, but they did, and as we mentioned, because of the TV title tournament, they actually have full cards that have pretty much wrapped around everything on this tour, at least until we get to the second night of Corican Hall on October 27th. So as the weeks go on, we'll be going through all of those. So including, by the way, they are stacking up November 5th here a lot more. The Incredibles tag match with the Incredibles, however you would call that, with the wacky partners, Wato, Taiji Ishimori, Hiromu, and Desperado, all will be decided as far as what wacky pair will be teaming together against each other. They've added that to the fifth, as well as the TV title tournament, the Anderson Hikuleo match, and then, of course, Ospreay and Naito.
Yes, and that Ospreay Naito match is the key. You know, that's a U.S. heavyweight title match that is, you know, as Mark and Lee talked about earlier, as fresh of a main event match as they could give, you know, whether it be the U.S. title, world title, anything. So I'm sure that, you know, whatever the show does, however well it does, it's going to do it on the back of Ospreay versus Naito. Before we start toward the path of closing the show out, though, there are a few other things, Mike, that I know you and I both watched and wanted to make sure we talked about, particularly a show that is up for free right now on YouTube. If you go to the Glate YouTube channel, their show from a couple days ago from October 9th at Corican Hall, this was an awesome show. We were both talking about this right before we hit record. They drew a great number. I think it's 1,025. And, you know, you can talk about, you know, the weekend effect, which is real and seems to be something over the past 6 months or so that's really taken hold in Japan, where even more so than prior years, weekend shows are doing much better than weekday shows. You also had some fairly significant outsiders on this show. Still drawing more than 1,000 people at Corican Hall. When you look at the a lot of the companies that don't come close to that right now, very impressive, and stylistically one of the most diverse and entertaining shows I think I've seen all year. When you look at just all the different types of matches and different types of wrestlers we had on the show.
Oh, it was so incredibly eclectic, you know. And I mentioned to Adam before the show, and I love independent wrestling. I love going to see a wacky independent show. And because of the nature of them, you usually get an extra bad comedy match and a really good match because there's two really good people coming into work. And you get a whole range of different things on it. And this is, in some ways, the best example of being able to do a show with a whole lot going on and different themes. This was great. Like, again, you're not going to be asking for your money back by watching this thing for free on YouTube, on the Glate YouTube channel. Everything was great. I mean, again, it wasn't perfect, but with the people that they brought in, you got to see people from different promotions work different styles. There was plunder, there was great wrestling, there was shoot style wrestling, there was good, there was everything. And I just really, again, I just thought, and I saw a lot of wrestling in the last couple of days here as we record this thing on October 11th, a whole lot of wrestling from all over the place. This really was my favorite card. And this really, again, if you tried to replicate this in the States, and we've seen shows like this replicated in the States, they don't, it just, nothing would be like this. I thought this was perfect, and I'll shut up about gushing over it, and we'll get to the details on it as to the reasons why. But I mean, the damn thing opens up with Minoru Tanaka, you know, who's still doing backflips off the second rope, you know, in a UWF rules match, the Ledette UWF rules match. And it just, this is how the show started, and it was great. I got a huge kick out of this show.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm in the tank for Glate. Everyone knows that, but it's just because I enjoy it so much, and it's such a breath of fresh air compared to a lot of the other, particularly men's promotions we see in Japan. And like you said, this was sort of, it was the format that we've seen on the major Glate shows, the numbered Glate shows that we see at Tokyo Dome, City Hall once or twice a year. Here it's Glate version extra at Korakuen Hall. So it's at Korakuen, but it's that same setup where we open with three UWF rules matches and then go into the more traditional pro wrestling rules. The second match, Shrek and Hikaru Sato against Takanori Ito and Yu Iska, 20-minute draw. I thought this was on the short list of best UWF rules matches we've seen since Glate started and since the Ledette UWF rules division has started, if not thrived so far, particularly the Takanori Ito, Hikaru Sato stuff was great. Shrek is just, he's
what
one
a cartoon
of a kind,
character.
For better or worse. He's just this huge, jacked, giant-headed guy wearing MMA shorts, kind of pantomiming what an MMA fight would look like, but he's not good. No one will ever mistake him for being good, but there is something oddly charming about him. Whereas Sato is just such a, you know, he's into his 40s now, still just such a smooth wrestler and can do both styles, traditional or, you know, the more shoot style UWF. And I'll never complain about seeing Ito or Iska in this environment in Glate. You know, we see them in the pro wrestling side as well. But this was really, really good. I think 20-minute draw, and I think it ended with it being at 3-3 in terms of the score, in terms of, you know, the rope breaks and knockdowns, you know, taking away points. You know, and if you get down to 0 points, you lose. I really, really enjoyed this.
You know what this show was? This show was the best of the collective WrestleMania weekend, just without a one, like, cake topper main event match. You know, like, one, whoever it would be, Speedball Bailey, whatever. Like, you can add a main event with, like, two names onto this, but, like, these UWF rules matches, all three of them were different. So it's like you took three matches off of Bloodsport, which they've done a good job about never really booking and laying out the same type of match slash fight one after another. That's what makes that so unique. They did that here because Tanaka and Nasu starting the thing off, and it only went about 4 minutes, but it was a good 4 minutes in there, and Tanaka getting the victory. And then you move to that match that Adam just talked about, the tag match, and you're able to have, because Shrek's in there, you get a little bit of comedy, you know, you're able to do some things, plus it's a tag match that you can have a little bit something different. And then you got to the women's tag match, which was completely different than the men's tag match, still under the UWF rules. Mika Iwata and Tomoko Inaba. And look, I know I've been deep in the tank for Tomoko Inaba, and I know I made fun of the New Japan television title and how it looked. And I know somebody will say, well, that looks just like the JTO title. Yes, but it's how Inaba carries that JTO title, which is why I like the design for that belt and not the New Japan TV title.
Also, I think JTO has the excuse of a belt looking a little bit more low budget than New Japan does.
They don't seem to have the same funds. And the fact that New Japan just continues to put out kind of, you know, ratchety looking belts. But that's got nothing to do with the fact that Michiko Miyagi and Maya Fukuda. And I know, Adam, you can talk about Maya Fukuda here a little bit, but, you know, she stole the show kind of during the match with just being so fired up. And basically kind of the story with her is she's in there facing kickers, and the only shot she was going to have was to get close. And if she was able to get you and take you down, maybe she could do something on the ground. But unfortunately, She was not able to do that, and then ended up dying at the hands of Iwata's kicks. But I thought this was a really good performance, especially for Iwata and Inaba, but especially Iwata, that, you know, kind of surprised me in how she was able to play off of Miyagi and Fukuda. I really liked this match a lot.
Yeah, I absolutely. And like you said, totally different from the first few UWF rules matches. The story of this, almost every women's UWF match on Glate shows, is Maya Fukuda basically being shoot-style Mikey Whipwreck, in that she just gets killed. She's small. She's got good technique. Like, she can throw kicks. She can do submissions. But she's smaller. She's the underdog. And she always has one or two moments where it's like, oh, man, this might be finally it. She might score that flash knockout. She might get a rear naked choke out of nowhere and maybe actually get the win. And then she gets murdered, whether it be here with Iwata with the head kick that she ran headlong into, or on previous shows with Chichiro Hashimoto and dying at the hands of suplexes there. But I greatly enjoy Fukuda in these matches, and somewhere, some way, some point down the line, hopefully when crowd cheering is in full effect at one of those shows, she's going to beat somebody. And it's going to be awesome. I texted you this right after I watched the match. Thought Inaba looked great here. You would expect, given her style, that it would lend itself to a UWF rules type of match, but you never know that until you see someone in that setting. And she, particularly, whether it be in with Fukuda or in with Miyagi, thought she had a fantastic showing as she heads into the Stardom Tag Team Tournament coming up relatively soon. So that was a great way to start the show with UWF rules stuff, you know, which is obviously going to be completely different than everything else on the card. We go from there to something that could not be more different. It's Kaz Hayashi and Somo Watanabe representing Glate, taking on the team of a guy who certainly continues to be in the news in the States, Bandido, and Commander, who, I don't know about you, Mike, but I've seen a ton of clips and GIFs on Twitter of Commander, but I've never actually seen him in a full match. Good Lord, if you're just talking straight high-flying, I don't know that I've seen anyone more impressive at the high-flying aspect of pro wrestling, just doing things that literally, and I use that word in the proper description, no one else in wrestling is capable of doing. That's at least two or three of the things that we saw here from Commander.
Yeah, if you're not following, like, Rob Viper and Fredo Esparza and Cubs fan, like, you know, he's one of the reasons why you do. You know, he is, that was, it was such a great grab of the steering wheel and a jerk over of, okay, Hayashi and Soma now with Bandido and Commander. And, you know, there was all that talk about, has Bandido signed with AEW? Did he not sign with AEW? WWE's, I guess, in, you know, at least has made him an offer or showed some interest. But
I was just impressed and kind of surprised that he was able to escape the clutches of Tony Khan's hug long enough to make it over to Japan.
Yeah, you know, which this thing was already set up and advanced, and I thank God it was. And I don't know if he gets home, then he goes and he dots I's and crosses T's and makes everything official. But I'd love to see him go back, because both of them, you know, Bandido is just so good and he's so much more polished than like Commander is. But there's another guy, speaking of Rob Viper, that he just, you know, tweeted some gifs of not all that long ago, but a guy like Commander, where it's like, it's just, it's amazing what those guys are able to do. I love Lucha. It's my, I don't follow it on a regular basis, but it's my guilty pleasure because I don't have to put any thought into it. I'm not invested into storylines. It's not a, you know, other than the big events, I don't have to cover it, so I can still be a fan of it. So to see these guys pull these moves off, you know, with Commander, and after you just see three UWF style matches, and then you see him doing these gymnastics on the ropes, I thought it was excellent. The only, you know, down part of the match is sometimes it was a little bit sloppy, because that's what you get sometimes when it comes to Lucha matches. And there
sometimes
was
you got to just stand and wait. And yeah, we had that a few times with both Soma and Kaz. It was super cool to see Kaz Hayashi, who still can go in there with, you know, like this generation's craziest high flyer. I thought that was a pretty cool visual, if nothing else. And just some of the moves from Commander.
Yeah.
It's almost hard to describe it. There's the one where it's a, He's in one corner on the top rope. He runs the entire length of the top rope to the other corner and all in one motion hits a twisting moonsault to the floor. And then the finish, where the only way I can describe it is like he springboards to the top rope and walks like halfway of the distance of the top rope, spinning as he's walking, ends those spins in a walk, still standing on the top rope, now facing his opponent, and then hits a springboard 450 on Watanabe. Just wild stuff that is so much more impressive than even words can describe.
Yeah, and I can't describe it. So look, it's free. Watch the match. And then also, you mentioned Kaz Hayashi's name. You know, it's 2022. I've been watching Kaz Hayashi now for how long? I was a big fan of his, obviously, in WCW. We'll go back to talking about that and, you know, coming out of the Toriumon gym. And I was a fan of his, you know, with his old gimmick with, I almost said Naniwa, but...
He was Shiryu in the old Michinoku Pro days, the glory days of Michinoku Pro.
And, you know, Lance Storm, I heard on his show last week, talked about the road to the Super J Cup. That was the first time I actually saw Kaz Hayashi Shiryu, I think, was actually on that tape. And then I ended up, you know, searching out some more from him. But, you know, the fact that he's still in shape, still able to go and all that stuff, I know we throw a lot of shade. There's a lot of negatives at the Muda regimes and teams as far as running companies from over the years. But as far as those guys and what they do in the ring, boy, Kaz Hayashi's been the MVP of that whole unit for a long time. And he's been somebody that even if things have not been great, at least you can count on a damn good wrestling match. And it's amazing. He's still able to do this stuff and then messing with Bandido and Commander too. I mean, just Bandido was so much bigger than that building. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As far as just like he's a real star. He just needs the spot, you know, and unfortunately ROH did not have that range, did not have that hype behind it, but maybe he's going to get a chance somewhere else. He's also one of those guys that's like, look, I know the AAA thing and this and that, but it's like, too bad New Japan's, you know, so loyal to their partners, because it's another guy that I would be dying to try to get in there, especially if he can't get an Andrade or somebody like that. He's perfect for New Japan.
Well, yeah, think about the guys they've missed out on because of that relationship over the last couple of years, whether it be Bandido, Andrade, Dragon Lee, who is continues to be in limbo as far as being able to wrestle in New Japan. So yeah, this was super fun. Like you said, total change of pace. Next match, don't have a ton to say about it other than it's cool to see Jake Lee in a different setting. Not that I mind him in All Japan, but it was cool to see him in this setting and come across like a big star to the fans that were there. It was Jake Lee and Czech Shimatani of the Bulk Orchestra Group defeating another sort of unlikely team, Shima of Strong Hearts and Jun Tonsho of the 60 Seconds group in Glate. Like I said, not a ton to say about this, but it is interesting to see Jake Lee branching out more and more to different promotions, because he's dropped hints and said things here or there. I still wouldn't fall over shocked if in the next year to 18 months, we end up seeing Jake Lee leave All Japan and end up in New Japan. I just have a weird feeling that is not, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I would be happy with that. I think I'm a bigger Jake Lee fan than you are, but you know, him going over there, him going over to Noah, and then, you know, going across Noah and DDT and Glate and whatever, like if that's the direction he would decide to go, fantastic. As far as the match went, you know, how could you really complain with the four names that are in there? I like the comedy between Shimatani and Lee. You know, I like Czech Shimatani. He's just, you know, he's a big charisma ball. You know, he's a big goof. And I think it came across great. So it was good. You know, it ended up being just a placeholder, though, for what I thought was probably the match of the night. And that was Kaito Ishida from Dragon Gate coming in to face Tetsuya Izuchi. And I know I just butchered these names here, but as this chest cold comes on and gets a little bit worse, it's just going to be like that. But this was the Glate Open Challenge match.
Yeah, anyone that knows me, Mike, knows that if you're going to put in a blender a bunch of different wrestling styles and say, okay, what comes out of it? It has to be Adam Summers' favorite style of wrestling. it's the type of wrestling these two guys do. Kaito Ishida, having left Dragon Gate, Tetsuya Izuchi, sort of making his home now in Glate, is a young wrestler slash MMA fighter who will also be fighting on Glate's MMA show coming up in a couple of months. But I had really, really high expectations for this match when it was announced. You know, two guys with charisma, guys with style, but guys with a lot of shooty goodness in addition to the traditional pro wrestling. I thought they delivered every bit as much, if not more, than I expected. This went almost 18 minutes. Ishida won with a kind of a half tiger suplex hold. But man, just so much good stuff. Izuchi taking control really, really early. Rapid fire kicks, strikes in the corner. They brawled on the floor. Ishida was legit bleeding from the, it looked like from above the eye, maybe also from the ear where his earring was in. But they just beat the hell out of each other, but in a way that kept the crowd engaged the entire time. Like I said, Ishida gets the win. And if he's sticking around, man, like, I can't think of too many more matches I'd be excited about seeing right now than L. Lindemann defending the G-Rex title against Kaito Ishida as one example. I just think as good as he was in Dragon Gate, and I go back to the matches against Keisuke Okuda in particular in Dragon Gate that I loved, I think he's more than just a kick boy here in Glate.
Yeah, you know, it's... This was his first match since leaving Dragon Gate. I didn't realize how long it had been. It's been basically the entire, he took the summer off essentially. And now he showed up here. And if he wants to continue to show up, I'm great with that because I loved this match. And, you know, I don't want to say who would have ever thought, but yet, to me, my brain doesn't work in the natural form of, boy, you know who would be great at this style? Shima would be great at this style. T-Hawk would be great at this style. Lindemann. And, you know, Ishida's not obviously in that class yet, but, like, it's another guy. Comes out of Dragon Gate, and if he wants to continue to do this, great. Because, again, this was a really good match, and I don't know if there's more drama between these two that's going to continue, but I just thought they were matched up perfectly. They were good opponents for each other. They were really good opponents for each other.
100%. I mean, I know that if I was fantasy booking Glate, and no one's asking me to, but if I was, I would have Ishida, if he's sticking around, I would have Ishida be the guy to beat Lindemann, and then down the line at some point next year, Izuchi would be the guy to beat Ishida. Because I still think Izuchi is, like, when you look at everybody in Glate, and it's such an eclectic mix, it's like, as we said, not just, you know, the guys from different companies or the veterans, but the young guys. You know, you've got Takanori Ito, which, you know, he's a bit more burly than the other young guys, but, you know, he's black boots, black kick pads, you know, kind of that mix of like a Shibata Ishii rolled into one. Soma Watanabe, high flyer, used to be a mask guy. You've got Yu Iizuka, kind of your more traditional baby face that also, you know, that has the shoot style background and style. And then you have Izuchi, who to me kind of blends all the best elements of what you have in Glates, you know, the style, you know, youthful. He's got a good look. He can kick. He can grapple. He's a legit fighter. He kind of, to me, is the distillation of what the company is. He's the guy more than anyone I'd be building around. So, yeah, I really hope Ishida sticks around. I really hope that if he is truly freelance, that we see him do this for a while before he ends up in, you know, New Japan, for example. Like, as much as he would be a breath of fresh air in the junior heavyweight division, I want to see him have matches like this. You know, let's say a match here with Izuchi. Think about him going to DDT, you know, and some of the matches that he could have there as a freelancer, you know, just as a few examples. I want to see more of that before he gets tied down somewhere. I think we're in an era where we need some big time freelancers. Think about when, you know, Yoshihiro Takayama was a traveling freelancer who can main event. You talked about Jake Lee earlier. That's what I'd love to see Jake Lee end up being, a guy that, is a freelancer. And 1 year he's spending the majority of his time in NOAA. Then the next year he's spending, you know, a bunch of time in GLAIT or in DDT or All Japan or even New Japan. Like, that's, I would love to see him be that guy.
Yeah. Who is the next Minoru Suzuki? You know, who is the next, well, you know, Yuji Okabayashi or Daisuke Sakamoto, you know, the guy who will just, and they were a little bit more limited, but like can just show up anywhere. You never know. But they're unaffiliated and they'd show up. And again, I mean, kind of like what T-Hawk, Lindemann, and those guys are doing and Sima's doing. And, you know, that
by the way, where have they been in New Japan? Remember when we were promised on commentary by Kevin Kelly, you're going to see a lot more of Strong Hearts in New Japan.
Look, that's,
I feel like we didn't see much after that. Maybe we'll see them in Tag League, but that was such a breath of fresh air. I know I've used that phrase several times in this show. It was, though, and we haven't seen much in a long time from those guys there.
Well, and it's just, it's, I know everybody, where you're such assholes about beating on the fact that, well, what could New Japan do during the pandemic? Use them! They're in the country! Yes. Like, and again, they may be hard to deal with. I don't know. I've never tried to book them before, so I don't know what it's like to do business with them. But they seem to go anywhere and everywhere. And they're good wherever they go. They're always in shape. Their matches are always good. And I don't know much about Issei Onitsuka.
And he's great. He's great. But young. He's great. And solves your booking problem. He's there. You can beat him. He loses all the time here as he gets experience and in GLAIT. So you can't tell me you couldn't beat him in New Japan.
Well, that's the thing is I'm watching like he was perfect alongside T-Hawk and Lindemann. And I just, this was a, again, this is not the reinvention of the wheel or anything, but like, this was the Kazuma Sakamoto. If you're going to give me a Sakamoto, I guess this is the one I'm going to take. I'll take this one. And Shigehiro Airi, I've never been as big on as a lot of people I know love this guy, but like, this is my favorite version of him. Honma as a, making a special guest appearance. This was the semi-main event, and this was a really, really good match. And now I want to see more of, Airi and Lindemann bumping up against each other. I really enjoyed this match, and it was a nice showcase for basically the old Strong Arts guys.
Yep, and we should explain. This was a semi-main event, six-man tag. It was L. Lindemann, Issei Onitsuka, and T-Hawk from Strong Hearts against another one of these wacky teams with partners you wouldn't expect. You mentioned Tomoaki Honma making a rare appearance outside of New Japan these days. And then Shigehiro Irie, who is a part of Strong Hearts in GLAIT, even though he technically really isn't a part of them the way you would think of the rest of the group. But he teams with them and is storyline a part of them. And then Kazuma Sakamoto is part of the Bulk Orchestra group. The story of this match was Sakamoto and Irie trying to work together but not getting along, accidentally hitting each other. The other story of the match was L. Lindemann and Honma comparing tans. There is no winner. They are the two most tan men in all of Japan.
I loved it. And actually, you know what? To be honest with you, Shimatani Stan, if he would have came out for that thing is looking pretty good too. Granted, he's got that pink hair, which kind of, makes it a little bit deceptive, but all of these men, I mean, on the tan scale, I am very, very impressed. Hanma is impressed. We should all be impressed.
Yes, 100%. Good stuff. T-Hawk pins Shigehiro Irie after a Kazuma super kick goes awry and hits Irie. So that was that. That then takes us to the main event, which we've talked about before. Your mileage may vary when it comes to hardcore / deathmatch stuff. This had some weapons. This still, I think, was more on the hardcore side rather than the deathmatch side. But you had Jun Kasai and Masashi Takeda, maybe not even the two reigning kings of deathmatch hardcore style wrestling in Japan. We talked in great detail about Jun Kasai and El Desperado a few episodes ago, but they teamed up against the Bulk Orchestra team of Hayato Tamura and Ryuichi Kawakami. Kawakami, no stranger to this sort of stuff from back in his Big Japan days. The story of this match, and you could hear it very clearly in the crowd, was the crowd reacting every time, particularly the women in the crowd are reacting every time that Hayato Tamura was on the verge of getting sliced up with scissors, a blade, a barbed wire bat. There were shrieks coming from this crowd that was supposed to stay quiet. But this was, to me, Juu Kasai is the type of guy that even he's the one exception. If you don't like death matches, you still can. I just can't fathom watching it and not be taken in by the dude's charisma. Just the visual of what he looks like, the scars on his body. He is one of the most captivating figures just visually on screen. And I would imagine in person as well of anybody in pro wrestling. And he's been doing this stuff for a damn long time.
Yes. And that's like he... His skin, his body, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. But it's his charisma. It's, you could put him anywhere and he's going to get over. It's like, I mean, he's got the same thing Mick Foley does. People
yes,
can throw themselves.
Doing any style.
Yeah.
If you gave him a anti-hardcore, total straight wrestling match, he would cut through every bit as much, no pun intended, that he does here some 24 years after he debuted.
Yeah, and I, you know, was watching GCW over the weekend, and it's like you had, you know, Cologne and Murdoch, and well, actually Murdoch wasn't in there. He was out, so Matt Tremont was in there, and it's just, you know, all of these guys, and no complaints about any of them, you know, Rina Yamashita and Drew Parker and this person and that person, and then it's just like, nobody's better at this than Kasai is at all.
No.
Because it's more when deathmatch works the best, it's like any wrestling. It's the story. It's how you draw the people in. And that, you know, that's just the bottom line. And the stories Kasai is able to tell inside of the story, you know, forget about just the story of the match, these little things he's able to do inside of it, which are, include, you know, bringing horror out of people, you know, threatening to use scissors and such. It's amazing. And at the end, the big smile on the face, cutting the promo afterwards, he's an amazing figure. And he's one of those guys that, you know, as time goes on, you know, as Onita slips and stuff, like, I think for a lot of people, I wonder if Kasai is he the linchpin? Is he the high watermark for people? Is he the person that, you know, this kind of generation now looks back on and goes, you know, Kasai, you know what I mean? And
absolutely
holds them up the same way.
100%.
Yeah, like the Foleys and the Onitas. And again, I'm not, some of those people I'm not 100% sure on, but like, I don't know. You know, he seems to be that dude.
I would agree for sure. And really deep into his career, it almost seems not that he ever went away, but it really feels like the last couple of years have been a career renaissance for him in terms of being recognized by people beyond just the fans in this relatively small circle of deathmatch wrestling. And to me, the most noteworthy thing or the thing that most accurately depicts what you were saying is seeing him here in the ring with his tag partner, Masashi Takeda, who is a very good wrestler and maybe like bell to bell, like the best deathmatch wrestler in the world. But next to Juu Kasai and everything else that Juu Kasai brings to the table, and part of that is just the years of history, but it's also just it's the charisma. Like he seems so. I'm not going to say second rate. Takeda is great, but he doesn't even seem like he's in the same stratosphere as Kasai when they're next to each other. The thing to me, as far as the match itself, that sent it to another level, particularly if you watch late regularly, is that at a certain point, as the match is, I don't know, maybe 2/3 of the way through, Kasai and Takeda are just blooding and bludging Tamura and Kawakami, who are not small wrestlers. These are tough, big power fighters, and they're being cut up, sliced and diced by Kasai and Takeda. And the locker room empties, and not only Bulk Orchestra, it's not just Tamura and Kawakami's regular teammates, but we see Kaz Hayashi come out. We see the whole of Strong Hearts come out. These are guys who have feuded bitterly with Bulk Orchestra over the past year or so, and they're out and they're desperately cheering on and trying to rally their usual rivals in Tamura and Kawakami. That really raised the match to another level to me, and you know, gave the feeling of Kasai and Takeda, while they're beloved, particularly Kasai, they're outsiders here against Glate, You know, watching it, you kind of wondered who was going to drop the fall, because all four of these guys in their own ways are you know, protected, pushed guys. I thought it was noteworthy that it was Kawakami that dropped the fall and not Hayato Tamura, if my memory is correct.
That is correct. Why were you a little bit more surprised by that, with Kawakami being the one that takes the L to Kasai?
Yeah, I guess just because Kawakami, he's been around for a long time. He was one of Glade's first big acquisitions coming from Big Japan, whereas Tamura is a younger guy. He's a pushed guy for sure. One half of the tag team champions, was a prominent part of the heavyweight title tournament. But I guess shocked wouldn't be strong of a word, but I would say, yeah, I was a little bit surprised in the sense that this really did show where Tamura is on the pecking order in Glade, and that he is going to be one of the most protected guys, and that in this match against outsiders like Kasai and Takeda, that it was Kawakami dropping the fall and not Tamura. You know, I'll be interested to see. You know, I would think that means that there are, beyond just the tag title, there are relatively big plans for Tamura in the company in 2023. But, you know, we'll see.
And, you know, you very good mentioning, you know, the drama of those guys coming out, especially because obviously not being able to speak the language, you know, you're wondering, okay, what is going on here? And then everybody kind of makes their way. It makes it feel different. It makes it feel dangerous. It made it feel special. And after, again, the entirety of this show, it was the perfect way to end. And that was the thing, too, that every single match, every single one of them, and granted, Tanaka and Nasu only went a couple of minutes, but, like, how they got to the end, I thought was great. I really enjoyed this show, and I'm not going to be able to do it anywhere justice, so I'll shut up about it right now, but you should go out of your way to watch this show. It's up on YouTube right now. It's for free. We told you the matches already that you should probably check out, but frankly, if you have a couple of hours, if you have 2 hours, a little under 2 hours, and believe me, you'll fast forward through some of the stuff anyway in between matches, so it won't even take you anywhere near that long. But I would strongly suggest anybody interested to check this show out. If you're not used to the UWF style, you don't know what a lot of people are talking about when it comes to it, you know, you'll get the idea real quick right off the bat when it comes to what it is. And then from there, you're rewarded with, you know, you get your crazy lucha going on. Again, it was a nice mix of a lot of different people. And I thought this was a hell of a show. It really was a good show.
Yeah, absolutely. There's really two matches in particular that I would say everyone needs to watch. That being the Izuchi Ishida match and the main event. But to your point, there's nothing on this that isn't worth watching. It's a very easy watch. You won't get bored. You're going to see different stuff all the way through, and it's free. So definitely check that out on YouTube. The only other thing, Mike, that I wanted to briefly touch on is the Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestle Princess show at Tokyo Dome City Hall, which did have full crowd cheering, we should mention. It's the only of the three shows that we've talked about on this podcast that did. Just over 1,000 fans. They had the, you know, every other seat being empty. You know, that's sort of the guidelines right now. I'm not going to run down the whole show because I think there's some stuff that just was kind of there. There were a few things that stood out to me, though. One was Suzume's performance against Ryo Mizunami. Not a huge fan of Ryo Mizunami as much as some other people are. Just some of the wackiness is just a bit too much for me. But when this match got going, I thought it was really, really good, particularly for only being 11 minutes. And then the International Princess title match, Miyu Watanabe and Alex Windsor, 10 minutes. Watanabe wins. I thought Windsor looked fantastic here. She looked great against Maki Ito a couple months ago in Tokyo Joshi Pro. She looked great again here. And if I am thinking about kind of an arms race between WWE and AEW in terms of signing up women around the world, if she's free and available, if I'm either of those promotions, I'm calling now and I'm trying to get a deal done.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, is she linked with Will Ospreay? Am I crazy for saying something like that?
I have no idea. That's a very good question. Yeah, I do not know.
I thought I had heard that recently, which even if she's not, to me, well, look, on paper, I would say AEW. That's on paper. Unfortunately, in execution, it's kind of a toss-up. Because I look at, like, Alba Fire, you know, and I look at some of the people that have gone to WWE and it's like, eh, you know,
Alba Fire, that's the former Kaylee Ray, right?
Yeah. And it's like, she was really good. And I don't know if this thing they got going on is very good, but then you look over at AEW and it's like, other than Britt Baker, they have not been able to get anyone over. And it's not been because they haven't had talent. It hasn't been because a lot of things, but it just hasn't clicked. So it's like,
though they haven't been able to get people over, and then they haven't capitalized on the people that have gotten themselves over, yeah. Whether that be Jamie Hayter, who's still stuck in as being Britt Baker's enforcer when the crowd is so desperately ready for her to get a run.
At least that makes some sense.
Or Chris Statlander, who granted the injuries took her down, but even before she got hurt, she was somebody who there was a real organic groundswell around. So, in theory, there are more, like, the path to being a top wrestler should be clearer for an Alex Windsor in AEW, but given kind of the state of the division, the amount of time the division gets, and just the amount of TV time overall that the company has, you know, that may not actually be the case.
And we'll see what happens with B. Priestley. We'll see what happens with NXT Europe, because again, some of these women came over like as I completely go brain locking here, but we saw some of those women come over because they are getting rid of NXT UK and it's becoming NXT Europe. So are they going to stay? You know, we'll have to see, but I would not be as close to the idea of someone like her or any of these women taking a shot in WWE as opposed to AEW, because like Yuka Sakazaki and Shoko Nakajima and Riho, like, are they coming back? Are they like, I don't know when it comes to that division and that company sometimes and how they decide to use people. It's so all over the place that it's like, I just kind of shrug. And, you know, and this is no offense to the Rihos or the Sakazakis or so, but I'd like to see an Alex Windsor come in. I'd like to see, again, we saw Yamashita come in, so that was cool. But like, I'd like to see some other women come in and get some shots here too, because again, I don't know. I throw my hands up and I'm not sure, but you're dead right when it comes to Windsor. And in fact, she has gotten a lot better, and the fact that she is ready for a step up.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see where that comes, how soon it comes, how that all plays out. You mentioned Yuka Sakazaki, the main event of this show. It was really interesting going in because on paper, Yuka Sakazaki, Shoko Nakajima, it should be a match everyone's excited about because they're two of the best wrestlers in Tokyo Joshi Pro and have been for a long time. I think the reason maybe some people weren't super excited about it coming in is that they're two of the best wrestlers in Tokyo Joshi Pro and they have been for a long time. And when you looked at the way the tournament leading to this title match happened, I think a lot of people are hoping that for either Miyu Watanabe or Suzume, who both got big runs in that tournament, they're hoping for one of the two of them to win. And even if they didn't go on to beat Shoko Nakajima, you'd have some sign of somebody getting pushed in the company beyond just Yuka Sakazaki, Shoko Nakajima, Miyu Yamashita, to an extent, Maki Ito, Mizuki, like the same crew that's been for a certain number of years, the top wrestlers. That said, when the match actually happened, I thought this was really, really good. I don't know if I go so far as to say great, because for me, great equates to what most people would say is 4.5 to 5 stars. But I thought this was very, very good. Maybe the only thing that kept it from being great to me was a really, really weird segment. I don't know, maybe in the middle, 2/3 of the way through. Sakazaki, after a struggle on the top rope, hits a top rope version of her magical merry-go-round, her spinning faceplant move, which is her finisher. She hits the top rope version of it, and then she just stands there. She doesn't go for the pin, and then Nakajima's up, and then they just do a normal forearm exchange. And a lot of times, like, I don't know, I have a lot of leeway for that sort of thing, and done right, it would have been fine. But it just felt so odd. It was like she hit a super version of her finisher, and then instantly after hitting it, it just didn't play any factor in what was going to happen. And the very next segment felt like it didn't even happen. Like, at least when you have trading finishers and fighting spirit spots and big kickouts, there's something. This just was, it was very, very awkward the way it transitioned. Other than that, I thought it was really, really good though, and it's worth watching. I just think, and it's, you know, it's something I mentioned to you, Mike, before we started recording. And I know I'll probably make some people unhappy when I say this, and I'll preface it by saying I like Tokyo Joshi Pro a lot. I enjoy it. It's a fun company. You get wacky stuff, you get good stuff, sometimes you get great matches. But I am of the opinion that it is a company that sometimes people wish cast and convince themselves is better than it actually is.
I think that's fair. I mean, that's a fair thing to say. And if somebody's saying, oh, you're full of shit, Adam, you love, Shimmer too much, or Shimmer, sorry, Stardom too much, and here are the reasons why.
I do love Shimmer too, God damn it. Dave Prazak forever.
and these are the reasons why. Okay. But, you know, I tend to agree with you. Actually, I absolutely agree with you over time. I mean, roster-wise, I thought Stardom, for the most part, has always had a stronger roster, except, I mean, even at their weakest points, I guess maybe, you know, for a little bit there, I guess you could say TJPW had a better roster. But it's just different. And I tend to like, again, I love Miyu Yamashita a lot. But, you know, from there... I've never been as big on Riho as some people have. I've never been as big on Sakazaki. I've already said it. Certainly not as much as you, but I just think there's not even, I don't want to say it's not comparable, because all of the women I just mentioned would do fine in Stardom, but I just think there is better wrestling in Stardom. And I think there's more believable wrestling in Stardom. And I know, believable is all what you want to think it is. You know what I mean? So, you know, don't hammer me for that. You know, whatever you like, but I look at the Julias and the Suries and the, that's just more my speed. And I get that more with Stardom than I get it with TJPW. And not to say the matches aren't great or anything, but like, if they've only wrestled one-on-ones like 6 times in 8 years, but it feels like I've seen Sakazaki Nakajima a lot.
Yes.
Because of all the tag teams and all that stuff. So, you know, again, and I don't know what they're, I saw Rio Riley was on the show, so I don't know what their relationship's like with Eve and all that sort of stuff. But again, this is not, I'm not hammering it, but if you held a gun to my head and said you only get one, I mean, no question to me, Stardom's a better product. That's just my opinion though.
Yeah, I think the thing with Tokyo Joshi Pro, I feel like again, the merits of it being fun, happy, good time, kind of wacky, I'm not knocking that at all. I enjoy it. I enjoy it as a change of pace. But it always feels to me when I hear people talk about a big match in Tokyo Joshi Pro, this match being one example, I always feel like, I don't know, it's like a half star overrated just because you're not seeing a ton of great matches in the company. Whereas like I see a match like this and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. I think there were probably 25 or 30 matches that I liked as much, if not more, in the 5-star Grand Prix this year.
That's a lot of matches.
Well, to be fair, 5-star Grand Prix also had 2 months worth of shows, but yeah, I mean, I enjoy it, but I think people sometimes want it to be better than it actually is and convince themselves of that. But in any event, we are pretty far into the show, so we should head toward closing it out. I know it's been a while since I've had a new issue of 3 Count Fall. I promise it's coming soon. Things will calm down and I'll be able to get that done. Working on it. It's coming. I appreciate the new subscriptions still coming in when there haven't been new issues coming out. So I promise that'll be coming. And then also Wrestling at Random, the show I do with my close, longtime personal friend, Jeremy Deemer. That podcast is available wherever you get podcasts for free, most likely at the same place you're listening to this podcast right now. You can listen to that show just by searching Wrestling at Random. We reviewed Again, randomly selected shows every week. We reviewed the episode of WCW Monday Nitro featuring Raven versus Goldberg on the most recent episode.
Yeah.
And what a show that was, by the way. You talk about a show that did everything wrong for 2 hours and 50 minutes and then did everything right for those 10 minutes of Raven versus Goldberg. Also want to mention that show is not only an audio podcast as of this season, it is a video podcast as well. So if you for some reason want to watch me and Jeremy Deamer review, for example, that episode of WCW Monday Nitro, if you go to if you just search Wrestling at Random on YouTube, go to our YouTube channel there. You can subscribe to that. The new audio episodes go up every Sunday evening, and the following day they go up on our YouTube page.
I remember liking the Raven Goldberg build.
Great.
Yeah, I could be losing my mind, but I remember really liking that. And it's like
Build, the match, all of it. Was perfect.
So it's WCW. But you really need to work on a 3-count fall because I need to steal some of that stuff and then reread it on the wrestling news.
There you go.
Your daily wrestling newscast every single day between about 7.5 and 20 minutes a day. We are going to give you everything you need to know in the world of professional wrestling. I do that for the Arcadian Vanguard Network, myself, Brian Solomon, Luke Hippelman. Those are the voices that you're going to be hearing on it. And again, look, we're not here to replace any podcasts or any of that sort of stuff. Every single morning by about 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. So if you're going on break in the UK or heading home from school or just shaking yourself awake out west, that show will be there for you. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcast. You can go to Arcadian Vanguard's YouTube page. I would probably avoid that if I were you. I always say that about any YouTube page, including F4Ws. Just stay away from the YouTube pages. Subscribe to the podcast. That helps us out a lot more anyway, or just go directly to thewrestlingnews.com. Like I said, every morning giving you everything you need to know without bias, without opinion, without conjecture, without any of that stuff, just straight facts to get you going and get you over to Dave and Brian or Voices of Wrestling or Post Wrestling or Busted Open, whatever it is that you want to hear. We give you everything you need to get into it. Unfortunately, because of that and some other things going on, I have not been able to do the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast in the way I would like to be doing it, which is a hell of a thing considering that's where my Patreon is attached to. So if you want to help me out in any project, you can do that by supporting the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Mid-Atlantic Podcast. For all the other social media, when it comes to the Mid-Atlantic Podcast, it's all Mid-Atlantic Pod. So especially on Twitter, that's the one you really want to give a follow to because I got some great stuff that I post up there every day. Give the YouTube channel a shot as well, too. You'll get some surprises on there. So that's pretty much what I got going on with the exception of Wrestling Observer Live, and you already know that if you're here right now.
One thing we should do very quickly before we go, Mike, because we made the call for listener questions just like basically minutes before we started recording, and we did get a couple in. Just briefly, we have Matt Logan at Logan's 50, who says, based on the new Vice series about the territories, what type of episode would you guys want to see on the Mid-Atlantic territory? I'll leave that one to you, Mike, and then I'll react, because as you just said, that is your wheelhouse and your baby.
I would like some attention. Like if they had to do a focused episode, I would be focused on some of the angles from back in the day that still resonate and that we still feel today. A look at I Broke Wahoo's Leg and Valentine and Wahoo and that. And obviously Dusty Rhodes getting turned on by Ric Flair. I think some, the I Quit match, because I think that's a great, in fact, that's the perfect example for this week. That I Quit match, I'm not going to bash anybody's I Quit match, but what Finn Balor and Edge did was pretty awesome, as far as like the drama that was built up to that. But if you're actually having an I Quit match, there's nothing like Tully Blanchard and Magnum TA and the whole lead up to that. So you know what? I guess let me throw all that other stuff out. I think if I'm going to do one themed episode, it's going to be on that match, because all of the lead up to it, all the parts moving in place and then settling in where they needed to be, the use of Sam Houston in that storyline, the use of the Andersons in that story, all that, baby doll, like, that's incredible. And there's been nothing, there's never been an I Quit match like it. It's the perfect balance of gore and athleticism, in, you know, of death match and sport together. I think that probably, that might be Dusty's actual magnum opus, is Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard. So I guess if I had to do one, I guess it would be on that. And I guess a secondary to that, it would be angles and stories like that that still to this day we feed off of.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of that, nor would I. I'm excited about that show and seeing what they do going forward. Hopefully, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of the obvious stuff on the territory show, but it'll be interesting to see what we have beyond that. The other question comes from Alex at Ancient Minority on Twitter, says, who could you see from Noah making a splash in AEW? I guess just as an aside, let's just say somehow the New Japan AEW relationship gets torpedoed and Carl Anderson showing up in WWE is just a part of all that, and somehow that's over. And AEW decides, we're going to work with Pro Wrestling Noah. Who are the guys that would best fit or would make the biggest splash? I think two guys right off the bat. I think one is pretty obvious when you look at current guys that aren't, you know, old veterans. To me, Kenno absolutely is the guy when you look at his look, the character. He can go, he can kick. He's ridiculously intense in a way that is almost funny unintentionally, but intentionally. I think that would get over with the crowd. The other guy is a guy that is not pushed at all in Pro Wrestling Noah, but I think if you brought him in there and he just started throwing dudes around and you did video features of him flipping tires and stuff like we've seen on his Twitter account or on his YouTube account, I think Yoshiki Inamura would be awesome in AEW coming from Pro Wrestling Noah.
Yeah, I think Kenno would be for sure. I mean, he's by far the lead standout there. I still think, and again, I'm stuck from a different era, but like, I still think if you gave America Masa Kidemiya, because they don't know him, you know, for the most part, and you package him up as a new Saito type, I that would work for me. You know, Kaito Kiyomiya is kind of funny because I can't. Is he going to get over better than like Takeshita? I bet you no.
He's the type of guy that needs to build his profile and come over as a guy who more people know about as a star. Like, I think he's a guy that if you watch the product a lot and you watch the matches, like, oh wow, that guy's great. But I don't think he's a guy who, if you put him on TV for 8 minutes, he's going to necessarily reach out and grab people in a way that it's going to stick.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Hideki Suzuki, I think, again, if packaged right with the right person and the right thing going on around him, could be something. It's just watching him work there. Again, it's a better look for here than it is style of wrestling. So,
yeah,
I think you pretty much said it all with Kenno. I think right off the bat, if there was going to be one, I think it would be him. And frankly, too, in this, if Nakajima counts for anything, I think if you brought him over to the States at this point in his career, too, with everything that he knows and what he can do, you know, he's another one I think would be great in AEW. It's just, you know, was that ever going to be in the cards? Probably not, no. Even if he ended up becoming a freelancer, I still don't think so. I can't see him ever doing an American Barnstorming tour, although I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming over in November, but I think there's only like one or two matches announced at this point. And yeah, I love the guy. I think that and he'd be, if I could choose one guy from the company that I would want to see live at a show in the U.S. that I was going to, he would undoubtedly be that guy. But I feel like for what works for American audiences, Kenno has most of what Nakajima has that would get over with American audiences, and has a lot that Nakajima doesn't that would get over with an AEW type of crowd. The other obvious answer to that, even though he isn't what he was before, you couldn't help but want to see at least once before he's done, Naomichi Marufuji get to wrestle in front of a big U.S. crowd and get a big response. You know, you could say, oh, well, that wouldn't happen. Not enough people would know him. But I don't know. I think there's a good chance that enough of the AEW audience would know who he was, remember him from Ring of Honor, know about him from the stories of Kenta and Marufuji and their great matches, that enough people would know him and the rest of the people would go along for the ride when they saw him. So I wouldn't mind seeing that at some point as well.
Do you want Ninja Mac to bring Alejandro back with him?
I wouldn't mind that. We should just briefly mention, then we're done. We're done. We're done. But I thought it was interesting that a Noah show headlined by Kiyomiya and Ninja Mac against Alejandro and Hayata did a much better number at Corican Hall than so many of these other shows they've done at Corican Hall this year with the older guys on top. I think that's just something to put a pin in, and let's see how that goes. Let's see how everything goes with the Kaz Fujita Kaito Kiyomiya match. But interested to see a year or so down the line what that's looking like.
Yeah, I'm smirking right now, so I'm going to end this show and hit stop on that smirk. What do you think about that?
I like it.
Bye, everybody.